Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen, coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. We've got a really cool show tonight. We have celebrity chef John Polk, who's going to be on the show talking about everything under the sun. And it's our first opportunity to have John on the show, hopefully not our last. So we're going to try to find out all of the cool things that are going on in John's world as he is calling directly from Portland, Oregon tonight, where it's probably like really cold and freezing like it is in much of the country. I'm getting posts from Bill in upstate New York, Wesley down in Mississippi. I had folks in Dallas contacting me earlier today saying they got 7 inches of snow last night, which fell on top of ice, and all kinds of other inclement weather. But for everybody who's been checking in over the last few days, we had a great big rain and hailstorm here in Huntington Beach, and you can go, woe is me, Trail of Tears, because that was our first world problem on Monday. But it was really quite devastating here at the house, and very grateful for everybody checking in. So for all of you that are still saying, you know, is the place still flooded? No, it's not, and we've had 70-degree weather and lots of sunshine today, so it's like that was just a really bad nightmare. Hey, I want to give some shout-outs to people who have been on the show this week and also promote tomorrow night's show before we get to John real quick. Monday night, we had Dr. Annie Ulrich on. Tuesday, we had Justin. I always get his last name wrong, so Justin, I apologize. Moikeha Asar out of the Gold Coast of Australia talking about liquid crystals. Last night, we had Broadway star Stephen Fales of Confessions of a Mormon Boy and Jim O'Hare from Parks and Recreation. And then tomorrow night on the Friday Night Dance Party at, we say the usual time, but that usual time on Friday really changes depending upon the guest. But we have Nicole, and she's going to be talking about her new album, Hallucinations. She is a top 10 Billboard recording artist, and we cannot wait to play her music. I love music guests that get all of their stuff here early. She has been an example of what I wish everybody would do when they're a guest on the dance party. Not that, you know, they're not all lovely, but she was so on top of it. She got me her press picture. She got me the music and everything way ahead of time. Very professional. So I love having Nicole on tomorrow night. Okay, well, let's get to tonight's show. We have a celebrity chef on here, and I want to find out all about how his development of food and love of cooking came into be. But John, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here tonight.
Hey, Garrett, it's my pleasure. I'm really happy to be with you.
I'm happy that you're here, too. You are an interesting gentleman, and you and I have been friends on Facebook for about a million years. You know, before Facebook was invented, we were friends on Facebook. And I have been enjoying your travels around the country and the different projects that you're involved in and all of the other fun things like your jewelry collection that you do. And I finally reached out a while back and I said, I need to have you come on the show because you're too cool not to talk to. But I don't even know where to start since this is our first time chatting. And usually I try to have people on more than, I say, you know, on a regular basis. You don't need to call in every day, but it'd be fun to have you back. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and what led you up to your current career?
Sure. Well, thank you again for having me on. By the way, the weather's been beautiful up here in Portland. It's been in the 50s, and we're going to hit 70
nice.
On Saturday. So it's been a beautiful early spring here.
Good for you.
I am a multifaceted sort of an enigma kind of person. As you mentioned, I am a chef here in Portland. I've been a chef for the past decade, going on my second decade. So I spend my life as a caterer and a chef in the Portland area. But before this, for 20 years prior to this, I had a very, very different career and background. So very unusual, but people that know my name probably know about my background. I came out as a gay man when I was 18 years old. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, went to Ohio State University, and kind of came out when I was 18 as a gay man and, you know, started living an open, active gay life. And 6 years went by, and at the age of 24, I found my life just not going where I wanted it to go. And so I ran into this married couple on the campus of Ohio State where I was going to college. And they started talking to me about Christianity and going to heaven and hell, things of that nature. And to make a very long story short, I did become a, quote, born again, unquote, Christian. And through months of Bible studies and reading books, I came to believe at the time that being gay was wrong and it was sinful and that there was something wrong with me. And that led me down a path of trying to not be gay. And so for 25 years, I spent my life trying to not be gay. Mm-hmm. And I joined an organization called the X-Gay Movement. It was at one time all across the United States and the world, and it was part of an organization called Exodus International. I rose up in the ranks. I became the chairman of that organization. I got married in 1992. I subsequently became the father of three sons. And about 3.5 years ago, I just found, at the, you know, around the age of 45 years old, I was getting increasingly depressed and unhappy because really my sexuality never changed. Mm-hmm. And the older I became, the lonelier I got, even though I was surrounded by people who loved me. And I was noticing a lot of my comrades across the country were going through this similar experience. And so I began to really embrace who I was, started becoming a more authentic and genuine person, and embraced my homosexuality again. Now, that was all in the midst of starting a catering company, being a chef, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow. So, okay, and not to put you on
that's
the spot.
That's almost a show in and of itself, that whole journey.
Well, then let's have you back to talk about that on another night. But I'm going to ask you a question just having to deal with the comments you made about being depressed as a quote-unquote straight person living your straight life. I saw an article, and I don't know if you've seen it, but it's been on Facebook, and I've seen it, you know, make its rounds before, where we've had people who have tried to embrace their homosexuality, and they said, you know, I'm just really unhappy because I'm not finding the camaraderie, and I'm not finding the brotherhood. I'm not finding the, you know, you make your list a mile long that I thought I would when I was when I tried to come out as gay, and I've got a whole host of opinions on that. So I think when I hear you say that I was really unhappy as a straight person, I hear, also on the other side of the coin, people saying I'm really unhappy as a gay person. And I'm really wondering, does it really matter, what you like? Are you just unhappy, where you're at and to change your circumstances? And it sounds like that's kind of what you did.
Well, you're exactly right. Your sexuality has nothing to do with your happiness, happiness or unhappiness per se. I thought that my homosexuality had led to my unhappiness, but as happy as I was living a straight life in a marriage of 20 years,
wow.
I was happy. I had a good marriage, but I was not being honest. And I was on a quest to be honest and genuine and real. And I was lying to other people, but more importantly, I was lying to myself. I was lying to myself. I was trying to convince myself that I was one way when I wasn't.
So was there a turning point where you said, I really just want to be authentic to who I believe I am? Did you wake up one day? Did you have what happened that made you get to that point?
You know, it happened over a period of years. Like I said, I was in a monogamous heterosexual marriage for 20 years to a woman I loved. But one day I was walking down the street in a neighborhood. I saw two men walking hand in hand, and tears started to flow from my eyes very unexpectedly. And I thought to myself, I want to be one of those men holding that other man's hand. And that seems very simple, but really it was very profound because even though I was happy, I loved my wife, I loved being married and in a family, my soul ached to connect with another man in that way, in a romantic way, in a deeper way. And really throughout my whole life, I had never had that. Even being gay and being young, I truly had never had that.
So for, I mean, okay, I love that. So your career with Exodus International took you all over the place. You traveled all over. How did you end up taking your family to Portland? When did that, how did that transition? Because I love Portland. You know, the Rose City is beautiful.
So,
I grew up in Oregon. But that wouldn't be, like, first on my list if you lived in wherever. I don't know.
Well, I originally had moved to the Bay Area to be part of Exodus in the North Bay in Marin County. And then my family subsequently moved to Portland. My wife's family lived in Seattle.
Oh, okay.
And it just got too expensive for us to live in the Bay Area, so that's how we ended up moving to Portland. And then, of course, we took a job to Colorado Springs. At one point, I worked for a notorious ultra-conservative Christian right-wing organization for 5 years, and that's when I traveled around the nation and throughout Europe, kind of spreading this message that change is possible from homosexuality, you know, at the same time still questioning it on the inside.
How difficult for you?
I'm sorry. When you're brainwashed and you think that something's wrong with you, and I'm speaking to a lot of people here who feel this way. They're raised feeling something is inherently wrong with them, that they're evil, that they're bad. And if they only could not be gay, then they would be acceptable to God. And I believed that for the majority of my adult life. And the disservice is that when you teach this message to teens and young people, they try to go through this change process and they can't change, or they don't change because you really can't. It leaves people with tremendous feelings of guilt and anguish, suicidal feelings, or sometimes they carry it out. And, you know, so I came to that realization myself that I have, you know, I'm in my mid-40s. A lot of things happen to us when we go through our 40s. It seems they talk about midlife crisis and things.
Sure.
But I think you reach a maturity level in your life where you start wanting to shed things about yourself and just be honest. And unfortunately, it happened to me at the age 45. What I try to do in my life as well as be a chef is let younger people know, please do not go down the path that I did. You're loved and acceptable and perfect just the way you are.
Right on. Good message. So at the end of your 5 years there, is that when you decided, you know what, I'm going to go from a public speaker traveling all the way around the world to chopping up vegetables and cooking delicious dishes? Because you do so many fun things, but that seems like such a completely opposite direction from what you were doing.
Well, it seems like a huge disconnect. So I really wanted, in 2003, I retired, quote-unquote, from this kind of work. Really, Garrett, it got to the point, I remember one of the last times I got up and spoke in front of an audience. You know, I used to get up and speak to audiences of 500, 600, 700 people as easily as I'm speaking to you here on the phone. And I got down, I was in my hotel room getting ready to go out and speak to an audience about this issue. I fell down on the bed and I was just sobbing, crying into the pillow saying, God, I can't do this anymore. I cannot get up and tell this story that I don't even believe anymore. Get me out of this. And I remember telling God, who I had a very close relationship with and still do, saying, is it okay if I just stop doing this? And he said, go home. Just go home. And we left. I retired. I remember telling my boss at the time I wanted to move back to Portland. He said, you know, you've been doing this kind of work for so long. I don't know if you'll be able to do anything else. And I said, well, I'm going to. I'm the king of reinvention. I feel like Madonna sometimes.
Yeah.
And I came back to Portland, didn't know what I was going to do. But I grew up in this amazing, remarkable family with this incredible Italian mother who was the most phenomenal cook. She had over 500 cookbooks. She studied cooking like we go to college. And I watched her cook when I was growing up and how she knew how to entertain and combine foods. She knew what went together and how many things you need on a plate and how to set a table and I grew up in this formal sort of family, and my wife at the time, I was still married, said, "For heaven's sakes, John, we have a Le Cordon Bleu culinary school in Portland. Why don't you go to that?" So actually, it was my wife's idea that I go. Within 3 weeks, I was enrolled at Le Cordon Bleu. They have one here in Portland. It's in the top 10 best culinary schools in the United States. It was a 2-year accelerated program. I was the oldest student in the class. I was 40 years old when I went to culinary school.
Wow.
And I was in class with 18, 19, 20-year-olds. And my goal, because here I am starting over at the age of 40, was to graduate with a 4.0, never missed one day of class, and I accomplished that, was in the top 10 students. And then I thought, now what am I going to do? I've graduated from culinary school, and I'm going to have to start as a, you know, some kind of salad boy in some restaurant.
Right, yeah.
So I go from the top of one income to the bottom of the other, and then so there was an industry called the personal chef industry, which actually is very popular down in Southern California,
yeah,
where you are.
Yeah, it's huge down here, you bet.
It's huge. It's enormous. Well, it was starting to emerge about 10 to 15 years ago, so I became a personal chef, and I aimed my business at the higher-income people of Portland. And so I've cooked for every luminary up here. We have a professional basketball team, the Portland Trail Blazers, NBA team.
Go Blazers.
Cooked for all the Blazers, the coaches. Nike's headquartered here. I cooked for the Nike owners. And then that just kind of merged. I just blossomed like a flower in spring. It is my calling. It is my passion. And the tagline of my company was Feed Your Soul.
Oh.
So for the past 11 years, I use food and serving my clients as a way of showing love. So I began to craft this company. Now I have 37 employees.
Holy
cow.
At the
time, we're a big, big, thriving catering company. We just took a contract for Nike. We're doing a dinner in June for 500 people. So it evolved over time, thank you, to be a large catering company where we do large events. And as you said, you follow me on Facebook and you see a lot of the pictures that I post. But I do it based on the change that happened in my own life where, you know, I felt like a butterfly that came out of a cocoon, and I adore the people that work for me. People love working for me. We're like a big family, and it's all motivated out of love for people.
I absolutely love it. 37 employees. That is just off the chain. You know, and I
now
would
they're not
guess
all
how
full time. They're full and part time, but totally, 37
yeah.
people.
So, and because we're not going to talk about your competition, because you know we're here to talk about your company. But how many other large scale caterers are there in Portland? There can't be that many. So you must pretty much be in a league of your own.
There are. No, there are.
Really?
Because if you know anything about Portland, it's one of the food destinations of the United States. I mean, it's in the top 5 food destinations. If you ever look at Epicurious magazine,
right,
and it lists in January the top restaurants in the nation, Portland is always listed numerous times. There's more James Beard Awards given in Portland almost in any other city besides New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles right now. So
wow.
We set so many food trends across the country. People that are not from the Northwest have no idea about the food scene here, but it's really unbelievable. And there's probably 5 catering companies. I mean, we're not even the largest. We're a boutique caterer.
Get out.
Yeah, we're a boutique caterer. We don't handle huge volumes of catering a lot, not like down in Los Angeles. As a matter of fact, many of our clients have told us we really belong in Los Angeles because we do a style of catering that's really, for many years it was not compatible with the kind of relaxed, easy, granola feeling, if you will,
sure,
of Portland and the Northwest. You know, from Oregon, it's very relaxed up here. Because I brought in a very chic, very slick, very contemporary, very modern style. And it kind of took me some years to get it off the ground. But now, after 10 years, we consider ourselves a destination caterer. So in other words, people that come to us are coming to us because they want our style, they want our food, they want the way it looks. We're known for impeccable style. I even very strategically hire, you know, my service staff to look a certain way. And it's tremendous fun.
So I didn't know that, John. Well, that's why you're here. You're to tell us all the stuff that we don't know. That is very, very cool. So you are really kind of like a trendsetter for fine dining or fine catering in the Portland market then.
Yes, fine catering. I mean, there's tremendous fine dining here for the Pacific Northwest. But our catering to this day is unlike any other catering. And people will say to me, where do you get your ideas? And it's so funny. We're doing this catering, this huge party for Nike. Nike is headquartered here in Portland. They do an awards show called the Maxim Tech Awards once a year. We actually catered it last year. It's the Academy Awards for Nike. So they're the largest employer here in Portland is Nike. And so we're basically catering their own internal Academy Awards where they present awards for all the things that have been created that have come out of Nike from the past year. And so the theme this year is farm to table. So as I was driving home from a catering gig last night, I thought, I'm going to get little wooden crates. I'm going to fill them with wheatgrass. I mean, little, like, two-inch wooden crates. Fill them with wheatgrass and pickle the most amazing vegetables. And that's just going to be one tray past hors d'oeuvre for one person. Farm to table. And I'm thinking, I don't know where I get these ideas. But so that's why people choose us, because we put – I know we're the most expensive caterer, I can tell you that, but we put so much detail into what we do. So for those that like that kind of thing, that's what we do.
So you were part of an event last night, the Taste of Design up in Portland, and what was that all about?
Well, here's the thing. Even from the time I was a child, I was thrust in front of people. So I was a child actor. I did television commercials as a child back in Ohio. When I first went to college, I was a music major and an opera singer. So I graduated with a performing arts degree in voice.
Wow.
So I was in plays. I sang on stage in front of people. Then I modified from that. I went into public speaking as my years, you know, traveling around the country with Exodus. So my whole life, really, I'm more of a public person than I am a private one. During the years that I was a public speaker, I probably gave conservatively 10,000 media interviews.
Holy cow.
On every magazine, I was on the cover of Newsweek. Were you aware of that I had been on the cover of Newsweek magazine?
I think I might have seen that recently.
Yeah, Newsweek.
You had a rockin' hairstyle there.
Oh, hey, right back at you there, buddy. Right back at you with the hair. For those that are listening, my hair looks similar to Garrett's. Not as pretty as his, but it's a close second.
Hey, let me tell you, John, I think your hair is just fine, but I love the picture on the cover.
We'll leave that one alone. I have a hair rivalry issue with you.
Okay, fair enough.
So did lots of media, spoke in front of audiences, and so naturally when I became a chef, I had certain goals set out for myself. Because I was starting this career so late and I had a family to support, I needed to rise to the top of my field as fast as I could. So I knew there were certain benchmarks that I wanted to hit. I wanted to teach cooking, so I went to Sur La Table. Do they have Sur La Table down there?
I'm sure they do.
It's a chain of cooked fine. It's like Williams Sonoma. They have fine cooking utensils, pots, pans. Well, they offer cooking classes. So within a year of graduating from culinary school, I was a regular teacher at Sur La Table.
Wow.
I wanted to get on local media, so I found the local cooking show here. I sent in my resume, and for the next 6 years, I cooked on the local AM Northwest television show because I wanted to change my identity. So I cooked on TV in 5-minute cooking segments for 6 years here locally. I started submitting press releases to the food day of the major newspaper here, and I eventually got a full, the Oregonian, a full page story on the food day. So I was starting to build my credibility, build my client list, because I thought strategically, if I want to be known as an affluent, high-end caterer, there are certain things and credentials I'm going to have to play with the big boys. You know, when you aim, I deliberately aimed my catering company at the top 3% of the income bracket, because that's the way I was raised. I was raised in an affluent family. I'm not saying I'm affluent, but I was surrounded by it. So I knew how to talk to people that's the way. I knew how they dressed, the cars they drove. And I'm not this is not a snobby thing in any way. I needed to earn a lot of money, so I aimed it at that income bracket. And I knew how to carry myself in front of those people. And really, for the kind of catering that we do, it's expensive. So because we do everything by hand, everything from scratch, everything one at a time, you know, it costs a lot of money. So which leads me to last night. So I have a great friend here who works for a huge, enormous, well-known design firm. And so I had recently been on national TV, which we can talk about in a minute.
Yes.
So I'm starting to gain some more notoriety on a national level now, not just a local level. And so I have the privilege of doing a really large cooking demonstration in front of a large audience in a state-of-the-art kitchen. And it was super fun. I mean, super, super fun. So I'm just starting. I haven't even posted the pictures on Facebook from last night. But tremendous fun. And, you know, when you go on national TV, all of a sudden you can start charging more money.
There we go.
That's kind of fun. So that was my most recent foray last night.
Well, let's talk about the Cutthroat Kitchen, and that is one of, you know, Food Network has this great formulaic way of presenting TV. It's the same show recycled over and over and over. God bless them, because I watch every single one faithfully.
Do you?
Oh, my God. Food Network is my downfall.
Are you a Food Network junkie?
Oh, my God. I love it. If I could watch Rachel Ray, you know, 30-minute meals on a loop for a year and be content 365 days a year. That's how crazy I am. I love all of the programming.
You know, I see the food that you post. I saw the food you posted today, so you must love to cook as well.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about this in just a second, John, but I'm going to tell you, from my experience, I get dangerous with food, because what will end up happening is I love to cook. I don't necessarily like to eat what I cook, because I've eaten the entire time that I'm cooking, so by the time that the meal is ready, I'm like, oh, fine, you have your big, I'm full, I'm way full. But I also end up cooking in ways that I find really fantastic, to eat like 3 minutes right before I go to bed. And so from a weight management standpoint, I've had to really change my whole process around food. So I'm not cooking a lot of the things that I used to only cook with, you know, the pastas and the beef and the cheese and the dairy and all of that, which I love. But all the carbs and all the fat and all the other things just don't really serve me well. So, you know,
you made a broccoli and tomato salad with a mustard dressing, and I'm salivating.
And it was delicious.
Wonderful. Yeah, it looks great.
I'm just trying to find ways to figure out how to cook decently, where I can eat large portions, because I could go to Claim Jumper or, you know, Cheesecake Factory and have a small whatever, which is still large, and, you know, ask for 10 more. So as a chef, how do you balance, you know, like the scale that you have to get on every day with, you know, your love of food and how you get ready to prepare meals?
Well, it's tough because people assume as a chef that you're eating the things that you cook all the time. Not true. Because when I look at food and when I look at people, it's so funny. My perception of my food is so different from other people's. You know, I have almost 3,000 Facebook followers who just love to follow not only my food, but my kind of strange, chaotic life. It's very colorful. I'm always doing exciting, fun things, and people enjoy my insights and sensitivities. But they look at my food and they say, I get hungry when I look at the pictures of your food. when I look at pictures of my food, I don't see food. I see an art project.
Oh,
so
cool.
To me, our byline at Mezzaluna now is that we're called Mezzaluna Artists Who Just Happen to Cook. And so
I love
to
that.
Me, one of our clients gave us that. I was setting up this gorgeous dessert display in her dining room. She stood back and she said, "You know, John, you're really just an artist who happens to cook." I'm like, I like that. Now it's all over my truck, and it's on our brochures, and it's on the business card. So when I look at my food, I don't see food. I see an art piece that I crafted and I created. But the reason chefs often have a hard time with their weight is because if you think of the hours that we work, we're at work really early. We often don't eat breakfast. You'll go all day. You're picking at food as you're tasting and cooking all day long. You get home at 10 o'clock at night and you realize, I haven't eaten all day. And the last thing I want to do is cook. So you eat garbage. You eat fast food. You eat frozen food laden with calories. You grab carbs. And so I've lost 40 pounds in the past year.
Congratulations.
Because
wow.
Thank you. And I'm still, you know, a bit heavy, but I'm working on it, doing what you're talking about. I am a bulk eater. I love to eat large quantities at one sitting. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you remember earlier this year, I was posting foods that were very, very, very high in protein with almost none or very little carbs, because it's the protein that really gives you the feeling of satisfaction.
Yeah.
So, for example, what I will fix for breakfast is 2 whole eggs, 2 egg whites, black beans, low-fat or really reduced-fat cheese or a hard cheese like Parmesan, throw in tomatoes, green onions, and scramble that, and then put non-fat Greek yogurt on it. That's got four sources of protein: eggs, cheese, black beans, and yogurt. That is 4 sources of protein in breakfast.
And I ate right before the show, John, and I would go and I would eat that right now.
Doesn't that sound good?
Oh my God!
It's my go-to, and then I'll throw salsa verde on it or green chilies. So it's and I also think that when you eat this way, if you flavor your food with spicier things, pickled things that are in vinegar. You can do that without adding calories. So I make a great salad dressing with balsamic vinegar, a little soy sauce, a pinch of wasabi, a little rice wine vinegar that is so flavorful, and I don't add oil to it.
You don't need it.
You don't need it, because what you're getting is, so what you have to do when you want to change the way you eat is remove the fat and the carbs and add flavor and freshness.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of eating the way that you are. So I can eat a large salad, a lot of fresh vegetables, throw lean protein in there, and just get rid of the carbs, which, as you know, the hardest thing to do.
It is the hardest thing to do. But, you know, it's like 21 days to form a habit, one day to break it. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but that's always, you know, been stuck in my head. And so I try to get into these 21 days of eating healthfully. And, you know, now when I start to see, you know, the breads or the pastas, even though sometimes, you know, the warning lights go off and the sirens are blaring, don't eat it. You know, I would have eaten that in the past. I'm really trying to be, you know, faithful to, you know, the vegetables, the lean proteins, you know, maybe an apple, you know, something like that, just to kind of, you know, get me through. And I'm finding, you know, like the broccolis, you know, that big bulky food, it keeps me full or quote-unquote satisfied longer. You know, I might need to drink another glass of water just to kind of, you know, trigger my mind to, you know, stop thinking you need to go eat a bowl of pudding. But it makes such a difference on how your energy is and your attitude and all of that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what do you do when you want to have something that's just like really a cheat for you? What is a, you know, like if you're going to have a snack late at night, you come home from a big catering gig, what do you do now that you know is still a healthy choice, but you're like, okay, that is, you know, boy, I'm really indulging tonight.
Saltines or pretzels.
Oh.
Because what I want is crunch and carbs, so I mix up I can do. I just do all kinds of sauces that don't have any fat in them. Mostly Asian-based sauces. I use chili garlic sauce a lot. I use wasabi. I even use ketchup. I will put a pinch of mayonnaise in it, or sriracha sauce with a little low-fat mayonnaise, and I dip saltine crackers in it or pretzels. And I'll tell you what, it satisfies that pretzel rods like the sticks. I think,
and they're low in fat.
Eat,
so, yeah,
they're low in fat. I think when you're trying to eat healthy, which I'm trying to do, you need the things they talk. And I'm not on a diet. I'm doing this slowly. You need to think about stronger flavors. You think about noise. And what I mean is crunch. When people that have problems with carbs, a lot of it is sensory. It smells good. It's satisfying on your tongue. It's salty. You hear a crunch a lot of times. And so another thing I'll do is I'll take sometimes an entire pack bulb of celery, an entire thing. I'll cut the ends off. I'll sit in front of the TV at night. I'll make some kind of low-fat sauce, and I will eat the entire thing. I mean the entire thing of
you
celery.
You are separated at birth, I swear.
Yeah. Or an entire head of raw cauliflower.
Yeah.
But I need the dip is what makes it satisfying, or the sauce. And so you're getting crunch, you're getting fresh. But for those of us that like to eat bulk, really, you're expending more calories to eat those kinds of things than you're even taking
in. Yeah.
You need crunch, you need color, you need variety, you need bulk.
After the show, I'm going to go ahead and send you my, I would say top secret. I'll share it with any, well, I'll actually share it with you right now then. I do this spicy mustard sauce that I make from scratch. It's three ingredients. I get a big gallon of mustard from Smart and Final. I don't know if you have those up in Portland, but I get the biggest container of mustard I can find. I get
Is this just yellow mustard?
Just plain old yellow mustard, and you're going to think I'm crazy until you try it, and you're like, holy cow, why didn't, you know, I think of this. We could go into business making mustard, I will tell you. So you get the mustard, and we get a jar of jalapenos. I drain the juice from the jalapenos, so you can still eat them or do whatever, so you don't throw it away, but just use the jalapeno juice. And then I get a big, big container of cayenne pepper, and pour it all together, and I make, you know, you get that mustard. Mustard's, you know, thick and blue. By the time it's all done, you've got this delightful light dipping sauce that is hugely spicy and flavorful and will just knock your taste buds out when you're talking about broccoli or cauliflower or celery or something like that. But that's what I put on all of my snacks now. And it's like, okay, there's the treat. Because if I tell people I'm eating a bowl of broccoli, they look at me like I've lost my mind. But if I say, and I've got my spicy mustard, which you've tried, they're like, oh, my gosh, that you have to do it.
That sounds amazing. I know some of these things sound weird to people, like you're kidding, right? Mustard,
right.
Juice from jalapenos and cayenne. But see, what you're doing is you did just what I said. You're adding vinegar, which gives you salt and sour. You're adding spice with a cayenne, and mustard is a sauce base. So you get exactly, you know, you're doing exactly what I tell people to do. And I make sauces like that. And then you use them for absolutely everything.
Everything.
And it's sometimes I want that sauce more than I want the vegetable. So you're getting both things. And mustard has no calories.
Which, that's the big thing. So I don't feel bad about, boom, an extra big spoonful.
No, it has no calories. I hate to say this. Sometimes I will even go out and get like a commercially produced fat-free Italian dressing like Wishbone.
Sure.
Which gives you a salad dressing base, and then I will add all kinds of flavors to it. And so people probably kill me, you know, this Le Cordon Bleu trained chefs, they go by Wishbone fat-free dressing. But sometimes doctoring something that's commercially produced is helpful, and it's good. So, yeah, I love the way you eat.
It's a great place to start.
I wish you'd post more of what you eat, actually. I'd like to see what you eat more regularly. So I'm gonna encourage you to post that more often because you have a great physique. You're really slim. You look very healthy. You got beautiful skin.
And your check is in the mail, John.
It's because of the clean eating that you're doing. So
yeah,
I'd like to see
really,
a lot. You don't post a lot of what you eat, but I would like you to.
Well, I'll try to do more of that. You know, the other thing that I do a lot of, and this is just something that, you know, and again, we're so off topic. So everybody who's listening and you're indulging us talking about food tonight right now, or at least what we're, you know, cooking for snacking, I appreciate that. But one of the things that I do from a liquid standpoint is I drink green tea now throughout the day. And I also, I need to send a big thanks to my folks out in Phoenix. And I was when I was back for Christmas, my dad has this lemon tree that's out in the backyard. And whenever I go, because he knows, you know, by the time of the year, don't pick the lemons, because everybody there has lemon trees. You can't give them away. Here, I don't know what the prices are in Portland, but, you know, if you get a good deal on small lemons,
they're $1 for a lemon.
Right, and it's like crazy. So when I was back for Christmas, we literally filled up 5 trash bags of lemons off of his tree. There were more, but I couldn't fit any more in the Camaro to bring them back. Today, I marked the last lemon from my dad's lemon tree, and he's back in Phoenix going, I've got 2 more bags if you want to come over and get them. You know, and gas is cheap enough now. It's probably cheap enough to go, you know, drive over there and drive back just to get the lemons and bring them back. But I drink lemon water and green tea all day long, and at night it's lemon tea or, you know, lemon and then magnesium powder to, you know, kind of, you know, chill me out a little bit. But I don't drink soda. You know, I don't drink, period, alcohol. So I don't, but I don't drink soda. I don't drink, you know, milk or anything like that. So it's really like lemon and green tea type of product. Do you have a favorite drink that you like to go to?
I like sparkling water.
Okay.
So I have one of those, you know, those soda machines that you can buy at like Target or what have you. And you just fill it with tap water and you get a CO2 cartridge. And so I have sparkling water. I love the bubbles. And
do you do flavors?
I can flavor it with all kinds of things. So I'll squeeze raspberries in them or blueberries, strawberries. I'll do different purees in a blender, like with mango. I love mango, nectarines when nectarines are in season, or peaches. And then I just put the pulp of that in, and swirl it in the water and squeeze a lemon or a lime. Oh, my gosh.
Man.
Of course, now I would add vodka to it, but
that's okay. That's
the
okay.
Difference between you and me.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, okay, let me get back on track here. You were recently on Cutthroat Kitchen on the Food Network. That's how this whole conversation started. Eventually, I'm going to try to bring it back around.
See, Sarah, you're just going to have me back, and we will talk
about
food.
We'll
pick a topic.
And then we'll
be your food expert.
I would love that. If you're serious,
you
I would totally
your,
do that.
You know, I would totally, totally do it. I've been on the radio for the past 7 years here. I'm getting ready to launch my own radio show about – see, there's so much to talk about.
I know.
People think you can't do food on the radio. You absolutely can.
You totally can. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
You totally can.
I love it. I want to
hear about Cutthroat Kitchen.
I want to hear about Cutthroat, but I also want to hear about your new radio show, too. So we're going to – on my list that's a mile long of all the things I want to talk about, I definitely want to get that, to that tonight. But you were on Cutthroat Kitchen. How did that come about?
Okay, so as I started becoming more well-known in the Portland area about a year ago now, I got an email. It was from the Food Network. Or no, it wasn't. It was from a casting down in L.A. You know, people think the Food Network produces their shows. They don't. Most of their shows are produced by outside production companies, and then there are casting companies that cast shows. So this company cast like 10 different shows, Top Chef being one of them, and Cutthroat Kitchen, which I had never even heard of, was another one.
Right.
So they had approached me, and I said, how in the world did you find me? I'm up here in Portland, Oregon. And the producer or the casting director said, someone walked by my desk and stuck a sticky note on my terminal that says, call this chef in Portland, Oregon. His website is unbelievable.
Wow.
And so they let a whole casting season go by. They called me, and they wanted me to apply to be on Top Chef, which Top Chef to me is the apex. So I did it. I applied for it. It's a 25-page application. Need video B-roll, 25-page application, video B-roll. You have to go in your kitchen, have B-roll taken of you. You have to submit recommendations from clients. Oh, it's – think of what you – what it can do for your career.
Oh, it's huge. Wow.
You know, you're on for 12 weeks if you left.
Yeah.
And so I nearly missed it, but one of my good friends here, Gregory Gourdet, an African-American chef, a gay African-American chef, he came in second on Top Chef. So I nearly missed Top Chef. You know, you have to say goodbye to your business for up to 3 months.
Yeah.
So it's a huge commitment. But anyway, at the same time, they said, we also cast for another show called Cutthroat Kitchen. Would you be interested in applying for that? I said, no, I really want to be on Top Chef. I said, would it hurt my chances to be on one or the other? They said, absolutely no, you can be on both. As a matter of fact, my friend Greg, who was just on Top Chef, got on Top Chef because he was on Cutthroat Kitchen.
Oh, there you go.
So I had never even seen it because I don't watch the Food Network very often because I'm oversaturated with stuff like that.
Well, you're already doing it, yeah.
I'm already doing it. So I watched it for many, many years, and now I kind of know everything on there is to know. And so
right.
I said, do you mind if I watch it? So I watched a few episodes, and I thought, you know, I really don't. Did you see me on it, by the way, Garrett?
Okay, I don't have TV. I don't have TV.
You don't drink,
I moved this in past.
You don't have TV. You don't
I know.
Date. What do you do?
I do this radio show. I've got
I'm
my album coming in.
You.
Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah. Maybe another time. We'll
that'll
do that
be,
some other
that'll
time.
That'll be the next one. All right. So anyway,
there we go.
I watched Cutthroat Kitchen. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have watched it because it's absolutely.
Is it on?
Crazy.
Can I get it on the Food Network? Can I go watch it online? Because if I can do that, I can go.
Can. I
okay,
think
then that's
can.
What I'm doing tonight.
But I'm not sure if you can. You can watch live episodes, but I'm not sure if you can. It's been a month since I've been on it. But anyway, so I watch it. It is the craziest competition, and I've had a fear of competing with food. So I've been asked many times to do, like, local Iron Chef competitions here. And I'm a pretty much of a fearless person in life. I mean, I'm a huge risk taker. I can get up in front of audiences and speak. I can get up and cook in front of people with no problem and carry on a conversation for an hour while I'm cooking at the same time. But competing under a time frame has been something scary. So I had a good friend, actually the friend that encouraged me that I did the cooking demo for last night, said, you need to apply for Cutthroat Kitchen and see what happens. So I reluctantly applied. I did get on the show, but my catering schedule did not permit me to do that season. They said, would you consider coming on next season? So this is it went on for about a year. It came around, they sent me the application, I didn't apply. The last day they said, would you please apply again? I applied, I got it. So I flew down to Los Angeles last August. Had I known you then, I would have come, you know, we could have hung out and gone to dinner.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Next time, went on and did Cutthroat Kitchen, and it's really, I mean, it was the most fascinating. You know, I've done TV, you know, in national television, CBS Evening News, Good Morning America, The Today Show, you know, in my former career. So it is the medium does not intimidate me. This was different. The studio had 25 cameras in it.
Oh, my
we
gosh.
We taped this one-hour show for 12 hours. 12
oh,
hours.
You're kidding.
We taped this show. I kid you not. And Cutthroat Kitchen starts with four people, and it goes through a series of elimination challenges. You have 30 minutes to cook this thing, and there's all kinds of sabotages thrown at you. And, you know, whoever's left standing wins. Valerie Bertinelli was the celebrity judge. You know, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I grew up watching her on TV, and she was just as sweet and lovely and adorable. People have asked me, what is she like? I said, exact she is.
Oh.
She's exact sweet, hugged and kissed me in the parking lot. So actually I didn't win. I came in second.
Of course.
So I came in second, but I lasted the whole hour. When it was over, the producers all scrambled around me and I said, oh, I'm so bummed I didn't win. They said, look, you are made for television.
I know.
And I said, well, you know, I'm comfortable with it and blah, blah, blah. So when the show aired, February, I think it was the
February
2nd,
Monday.
Yeah, so it's just been about a little over a month now. the camera was on my face more than anybody else's, because I'm so comfortable with the medium and comfortable.
Yeah.
So all those years of being in front of audiences and everything, they've really prepped me for this. So
prepped
now I've applied for Chopped.
I would love that.
That's a great cooking show. I've applied for that. And I've actually been approached in the past year by three different production companies about doing a reality-based show about my catering company.
John, I love it. You got to do it.
Nothing's materialized yet because the last foray was for a Los Angeles-based company who does, they all do reality shows, unscripted TV, and they didn't think my staff could keep up with my personality. And so, I was an opera singer, Garrett, so I'll walk into my kitchen, I'll start belting out an aria and scare my staff, or I'll pick up one of the chefs and I'll start dancing with her. It's just so people look at me that are new and I say, okay, I'm crazy, but I'm lovable. And so, I'm perfect for a reality show, but it hasn't quite materialized yet, but we're all confident that it might at some point.
I think you would be great. That, I would buy cable again for that. So,
yeah,
or
satellite
or whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
Can we go back and talk about like the details of Cutthroat Kitchen? Because since you've done this now, I am fascinated because, you know, I know that ages ago I was listening to an interview with, I don't know, Bobby Flay or somebody from Food Network talking about his time on Iron Chef, where it's like you have 60 minutes to cook this meal. And, you know, and so as a viewer, we're thinking these 43 minutes of TV really happens in 43 minutes, but it's not that at all. It's this, you know, you find out what you're going to do, then you plan everything, you know, you get your ingredients. And how do you take 23 minutes of TV and
into that
12 hours?
Let me tell you the reality of why it takes. Yeah. So what takes so long is it's, so in this particular show, you do three different cooking challenges. So the first one was steamed clams. All right, steamed clams. So what you do is they set you up behind your cutting board. You all have your own individual stovetops and ovens. Then there's a pantry that you go in and you, quote-unquote, shop for your ingredients. But there's stops and starts between all of that. So it's the setup, it's the camera angles. So you go and you shop for your ingredients twice. So they tape you doing it two times. They focus on your hands maybe one time. They focus on your face. Then you come back, then they stop. Then the producers take your basket away. They photograph and inventory what's in it. They put it back in your basket, and then you get ready to go. All right, so the only thing that is real is when they give you 30 minutes to cook, that is real. There is no stopping. When that time starts, you have 30 minutes, and even if you get a cut, there's a medic on the stage. The girl cooking next to me, you yell, medic. He runs over, he bandaged her fingers, and you keep going. There is no stopping. So when people watch on TV, you have 30 minutes, that's real. There's nothing fake, nothing artificial. You do not stop and start. That is real. And so you have 30 minutes. But as soon as you're done, you prepare two plates. They take one away. They photograph it. They clean your kitchen up. Then the judge comes down, and you go through all that. So lots of stopping and starting. And then before you go to the next challenge, you go upstairs. They put you back in hair and makeup. They clean the set. They restock the pantry. So that is what's taking all of the time. They do all your dishes for you. They wash your knives, cutting board. They refill all the plates. And so that is what's taking the time to do it. But the actual cooking is real. So like when Bobby Flay is on Iron Chef and they cook that in an hour, they are cooking that in an hour. That is real. And a good friend of mine was on Chopped, same thing. When you're given a time, that is real. So people are not being deceived. You know, and that is the pressure.
Yeah, I never really, you know, because as a viewer, you're probably not expected to think about the starting and the stopping. Oh, okay, we need to reshoot this or redo that. You know, 30 minutes is real, but it's all the other stuff that takes up so much time that is quite deceiving from a viewer standpoint.
So,
when
you're watching a cooking show or any kind of competition, you know how they cut away to just your face, and you look like you're sitting in a room and you're talking to the camera.
Right.
And they're getting that's done the next day. Well, after the show is all done and you know the outcome, they brought me back the next day, the winner and the first runner-up, which I was, and you spend 3 hours, and they have someone that wrote down everything you did and said the entire day when you're on camera, and they throw it back at you to get your reaction. Well, you know, Chef Juan just took away this, and you looked very upset. What were you thinking? And then you have to say, well, I'm thinking, and then you have to put it back in the present tense as though it's happening right now. And then they slice all that together. So it was more fun than I have ever had. I proved to myself I could cook under pressure. And actually, because I am a caterer, I'm so used to doing things in a methodical, planned-out order. See, I work from back. So before I start cooking, I plan the plating. That's the first thing I'm going to do. So everybody was there working on their food. I went over and got the serving dish. I brought the serving pieces over and everything I would need to plate it, and I worked from backwards forwards because I'm very good with time management. I was the first chef done on every challenge. If you go back and you look at it, my presentations were stunning because I work, and I'm older than them, so I have the maturity that a lot of these kids don't have, so I work in reverse. So it just was great. It removed my fear of cooking on TV, and I'm like, come on, baby, let's bring it now.
Bring it on. Well, John,
bring it on. We're out of time.
We're out of time. And, again, I've got to, like, 3% of the stuff that I wanted to talk to you about tonight. So you'll have to come back. We'll talk about show dates off air. But any last words of wisdom or encouragement or inspiration to the listeners out there tonight before I let you go?
You know, we talked about so many different things. And I would just say to people, you'll see on Facebook a lot, if you could say two words to your younger self, what would you say? My two words are be authentic. Figure out who you are and own who you are. Be true to yourself because that honestly makes you happiest and it brings you the most joy. So whoever you are, crawl out of your circumstances and be authentic.
There we go. Everybody, it's been Celebrity Chef John Polk. We are going to be back tomorrow night with Nicole, top 10 Billboard recording artist with her hits, including Gonna Get It Right, Zero, and My Beautiful Man. Everybody else, don't drive distracted. We will see you live Friday. John, thank you so much. We'll be back tomorrow.
My lover's got humor. She's a giggle at a funeral. Knows everybody's disapproval. I should have worshipped her sooner. If the heavens ever did speak, she's the last true mouthpiece. Every Sunday's getting more bleak, fresh poison each week. We were born sick, you heard them say it. My church offers no absolute. She tells me worship in the bedroom. The only heaven I'll be sent to is when I'm alone with you. I was born sick, but I love it. Command me to be well.
Okay, everybody, here we go. I'm sitting here trying to chat with John offline for just a second, and the song ran out. I am so sorry about that, but here we go. The show really is ending right now, and you guys all have a great night.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.